Well, good morning, and thank you for being a part of this press conference this morning. My name is Dave Quist. I'm the Executive Director of the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. The Institute of Marriage and Family was founded in 2005 as a social policy research institute. We conduct, compile, and present the latest information in social policy, primarily within Canada, but we also gather information from around the world. Today, we're pleased to be presenting a new report entitled Private Choices, Public Costs, How Failing Families Cost Us All. The authors of the report, Andrea Mrozek and Rebecca Wahlberg, are here with me today, and full information will be available on our website, which is in the press kit as well. Andrea Mrozek joined the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada in 2006 as the Manager of Research and Communications. She has a master's degree in history and has done a number of different articles and op-ed pieces across many national and provincial newspapers across the country as well. Rebecca Wahlberg is a president and founder of the Wakefield Center for Policy Research and is a co-author with the report as well. She also has a master's degree in history from the University of Manitoba. She does research in healthcare and social policy and has also appeared in many Canadian dailies, website magazines, and so on. It's my pleasure to introduce Andrea Mrozek and Rebecca Wahlberg.
The protection that marriage provides against child poverty is the major theme of our new study that we're releasing today. Private Choices, Public Costs, How Failing Families Cost Us All is a quantitative assessment of the fiscal costs to government and therefore to taxpayers of broken families. The data shows that when marriages fail, we all pay billions of dollars. We estimate family breakdown is costing the Canadian taxpayer almost $7 billion annually, and that is a very conservative estimate. While we cite those numbers, we hasten to add that this research is really not about numbers or finances. It's about improving the position of those living on the margins. It is about looking into the long-term future for families and stability. The more we talk about the protective benefits of marriage against poverty, the more individuals can make healthy choices from the range of options available to them. And now Rebecca is going to talk a bit more about how we did the work.
Thanks, Andrea. We went through the public accounts in each province and found the cost of means-tested poverty reduction programs. We calculated the proportion going to broken homes, single-parent families, and from here we get the figure of close to $7 billion annually. We then calculated the possible savings, using as a basis the Canadian research by academics Finney and Sweetman. Their work, published in 2003, shows that of poor single parents who become part of intact families, 54.8% would be lifted out of poverty by becoming part of an intact family. For the sake of simplicity, as well as our inherently cautious approach, we use 50% instead of 54.8. So to put simply, we estimate that half of families making this transition would no longer be poor. The costs and the savings are a bare minimum, in particular in comparison with existing and similar studies done in the UK, New Zealand, and the US. For example, we didn't include costs of family breakdown associated with the justice system or education. These major factors are more difficult to measure and are not associated with direct poverty reduction measures, and so we left them out. We don't want skeptics to quibble over our methodology, and so we've gone with the most conservative estimate possible at every turn. Social science shows that strong marriages enhance the social whole, and that we ignore marriage as a part of poverty reduction at our peril. There's a strong link between married parents and stability for children. Children who start their lives with their own married parents tend to be healthier, do better at school, and have stronger relationships themselves as adults. There is a clear correlation between marriage and well-being for adults and for children, although we focus on children in this report. And that translates into stronger extended families, healthier communities, and finally, a stronger economy. But even in these tough economic times, this isn't an argument that most Canadians are hearing. And that's why we wrote this report. We are calling attention to the importance of stable families by attaching a price tag to those that fail. Through this, we hope to show every Canadian why families matter to us all. Nationally, the direct taxpayer costs of poverty alleviation for broken and single-parent families would be reduced by at least $1.7 billion annually if we could achieve cutting the family breakdown rate in two. This may be a conservative estimate, but it's still a consequential sum of money. For instance, it's 1/10 of our annual military budget. It's also 1/10 of the projected cost of our mission in Afghanistan from its beginning until 2011. $1.7 billion is also the most recent estimate of the budget for the 2010 Vancouver Olympics. And calculating very roughly, a family of four might save about $1,000 annually were family breakdown to decrease by half. The reality is that more and more Canadian families are failing. The recent census showed that fewer Canadian families with children are married than ever before. In 1961, 92% of families were headed by a married couple. In 2006, that number had fallen to 69%. One in seven households with children is headed by two cohabiting adults, a family form that is less stable than marriage. Another one in seven is headed by a single parent, most often a mother. These families are radically more likely to live in poverty. Certainly, family breakdown is not about dollars and cents. The most devastating damage of broken families involves children torn between warring parents, parents struggling to maintain relationships with their children, and the weakening of bonds within the extended family. But there are financial repercussions, and these can be more easily measured. Furthermore, we hear constant calls to focus on the economy today over and above family and community. The reality is that a focus on the economy will mean taking a good look at how we do family in Canada today.
Because the focus of our paper is education, our recommendations are not heavy-handed. They don't involve government intrusion in private lives. Rather, we are asking that education on the benefits of marriage for social cohesion be introduced in schools. We think of those who go for premarital counseling. Why not let them know of the public benefits of marriage? We look to measures that could strengthen the two-parent family, things like allowing family taxation, which allows parents to decrease their tax burden by filing jointly. We are calling for marriage to be held separate from other family forms that are not as strong, those that do not confer the same benefits on the individuals involved or on society, and that's in the statistics as well. Children fare best on many different indicators, financially, educationally, psychologically, even in terms of physical health, when they grow up with their own married parents. Family breakdown is one pathway to poverty. It's not the only one, but it's the one we're focusing on at the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada today. If we're serious about finding a remedy for child poverty, or better yet, preventing it, we can't afford to shrug our shoulders and avoid a discussion about why marriage matters, not only for husbands, wives, and children, but for us all. So at this point, if anyone has any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Model, but the argument against that is persistently that it would be judgmental. The government would be saying, well, this type is better than others. Others say, well, it's detrimental to women because women need to be able to file their own family, their own individual tax return. Can you answer those? If we take this to the politicians, that'll be their immediate response. So what would you say to them conventionally?
I would point to the international example of many different countries who allow for family taxation to no detriment to women whatsoever. France, for example, has a model whereby single moms can jointly share taxes with a child, for example. It's very equitable, and it actually, I would argue, could enhance the position of women, in particular women who want to have different options on how they care for their kids. But there certainly is a lot to be said for the international example and a lot of benefits there. As to the idea that a certain type of family is better than another, we're not making this into a competition or a ranking hierarchy, but we're pointing to a body of social science evidence that says that kids do fare best in a married parent home. And so that's something that we can't avoid or work around. It's not a statement of judgment. It's something that I would like to know as a young person setting out on my life. I don't know if Rebecca wants to add anything.
I'd just add that tax incentives are one of the ways that we promote behavior that leads to good outcomes. You know, the tax credit for child fitness doesn't mean we're judging people whose kids don't play soccer. It just means that we're recognizing something that we know will contribute to good outcomes down the road. And this is the same thing. It's a way of attaching a fairly small incentive to doing something that we know is in the long-term public good as well as private good.
in many similar news conferences concerned about child poverty, marriage is never mentioned in all the ones that I have been to as a solution. Usually it is, we need more money to help bring the single parent up to the standard. Do you have any concerns about whether that approach is a good approach or not? It does bring people up on an income level, but is that enough?
I might start by saying that welfare is a measure of last resort, and so government resources that are intended to do good in that way, it is good, I think, for people who are really down and out. But what we're aiming for is a society and a culture where families are strong and independent to make their own choices, and understanding that welfare is actually a substantial burden for many who need to be on it. They don't want to be on it. And so we'd actually hope to build up this culture where families are strong and independent. And that doesn't involve giving more money.
Right. Will there always be some single-parent families in poverty? Yes. Should we do everything we possibly can to make sure that they have good outcomes? Yes. But overall, as with using a prevention model in medical management rather than responding to crises after the fact, the best way of preventing more people from ending up in poor single-parent families is to strengthen marriage.
Hasn't it always been worse?
And so why is it different now? Expensive to get divorced.
Isn't it expensive?
Oh, so you're saying that divorce might actually...
It's always been sort of an expensive thing to do. So what's different now?
I think you're getting at the concept that divorce actually inhibits family breakdown because it's so expensive, or...
Saying that divorce costs a lot to the public. Hasn't it always been an expensive measure to do? And so why is it different now than saying...
Right. Mm-hmm. Because the rates of family breakdown are increasing, so that would substantially increase the costs associated with it. That would be one reason I could think of that would make it different from the past. So in the report, you see the data from, say, the earlier years, 60s, and progressing to today. So we have a much higher rate of divorce at this point. I don't know if that helps.
Are you referring to the fact that divorce costs a lot of money for the couple who are divorcing?
Consequences here that are greater now than before?
Well, part of the problem now is that we talk about divorce a lot, but divorce is not even the worst of it. The biggest issue tends to come when people who cohabit but aren't married break up, or for couples who've never really been together at any point in the child's life. I mean, we know that in terms of the quality of the parental bond, but also in terms of things like child support, people who have been married and then divorced, they tend to have less of a risk of poverty, and there's a higher rate of compliance with child support orders than couples that have never been married. So part of what's different today is not so much simply that divorce has increased, but that increasing numbers of couples are never married in the first place before having a child and then breaking up.
We might also see that in the past, divorce was too hard to get. But then we liberalized divorce laws, introduced no-fault divorce, I think, in 68, and it became arguably too easy. So the pendulum really swung, and so we're looking to sort of have that pendulum go back to the middle, where you wouldn't see quite as many divorces, and neither would we return to a day where it was completely inaccessible.
Canadian politicians don't talk about this issue.
I don't think any Canadian talks about it. I wouldn't limit it to the politicians. I think that it's interesting to me to note my own progression and learning on this topic. And it seems to be that Canada, when you look at an international body of literature, is not addressing this issue in the way that other countries are, like the United Kingdom, New Zealand, Australia, and the United States. And so we've put those examples in the report. We're starting out on this education front and releasing the report and hoping that all Canadians will take note, including Canadian politicians.
Breakdown, how you got to $6,850,000,000?
Okay, what we did is we looked at poverty reduction programs, so programs that are means tested. We didn't include things like the universal child care benefit because that's not linked to poverty. It's provided to all families regardless of their wealth. So we looked at each province, and we looked at all of their poverty reduction programs, and we grouped them into four categories. Is this better? We group them into four categories. There's income supplement or welfare, child care subsidies, housing subsidies or public housing, and then other, which is usually programs devoted to things like paying for glasses, prescription drugs, dental care that's not within normal health care but unaffordable for a family in poverty. So we looked at those programs for each province. Then we looked at the fraction of people in poverty in each province who are in broken families, and we looked at who the target audience was. So income supplements and housing supplements are available generally to everyone, regardless of age or family status, if they're below a certain means test. Programs that provide free eyeglasses for children are only available for children who live in families below the means test. So we took the cost for all these programs, multiplied it by a ratio that reflected the proportion of recipients who were in broken homes, and then added it up for each province and across the country. And that's how we got the number that's just a shade under 7 billion.
Say, in a two-parent family, you only include couples who are married, or you include couples who are cohabitating, or couples who are remarried, or same-sex couples who are living in a marriage relationship? Like, can you just elaborate on exactly what you mean by two-parent family?
For sure. Almost all of the time when we refer to a two-parent family, we're using numbers, right, we're using numbers from the 2006 census. So everything except the pie chart, use that. The census just tells you whether or not it is a two-parent household or not. So it doesn't tell you whether they're married or common law. It also doesn't tell you if it is a biological parent and a legally married step-parent, or a biological parent and a common law spouse. So for most of this study, when we say two-parent, we mean two adults in the household, regardless of whether or not they're married.
And if that data is marriage, we don't know that.
Well, we know that in almost every province except Quebec, that's the majority of it. And it certainly is clear that while marriage is the ideal in terms of a lot of indicators, children with two parents still fare a lot better than children with single parents.
Elaborate on what you mean by marriage back to the public school. You sort of touched on it before.
Right. Well, the reality is that marriage creates a lot of benefits for the society at large. Studies done, especially in the States, have found that communities where marriage is low and fatherlessness is high tend also to breed a certain lawlessness. They have higher rates of truancy, higher rates of gang involvement and drug use. Children in communities like that are more likely to become sexually active earlier, which means they're more likely to become pregnant earlier, which sort of perpetuates the cycle. But beyond sort of the cultural effect, there is also the element of demand on public systems, which makes it a public good. When children grow up with their own married parents, they enjoy better physical health, better mental health, they do better in schools, they are less likely to be underemployed as adults, and all of this contributes both to a reduction in the demand for public services and an increase in how much they contribute, because underemployment leads often to lack of income and dependence on government again, and reduce tax income. So in a lot of ways, when you're looking at the effects of growing up with both your married parents and other arrangements, you're looking at something that affects not just kids right now, but their interaction with a number of public systems for decades to come.
Well, we're working for a culture where that is seen to be a more viable option, and certainly never advocating that in a desperate circumstance somebody would stay together just because. But again, looking at that pendulum swing and bringing it back somewhere to the middle. I might also add on the nature of marriage as a public good. A documentary came out not too long ago, aired on Global. It was called Shattered Dreams. It was not about family breakdown or marriage, but it did touch on it in a significant way because it featured a Toronto area that is having problems with gun crime and interviewed a lone mother and her difficulties in raising her kids. And then the community, different kids in the neighborhood were also interviewed. And the absence of fathers was certainly creating a significant public impact on their community insofar as the boys they interviewed, with all boys and my two girls, that the father absence was creating an environment where the mother herself said it was difficult for her to raise her kids. So you can see how that absence of role models is something that we then try to compensate for in other ways.
But you're not advocating that people stay together if what you mean by that.
That's something everyone has to define for themselves, because we can't ever really judge what goes on inside someone else's marriage. What we'd like to see, though, isn't so much a culture that just relies on glib, stay married no matter what, as a culture in which people say marriage does a lot of good things and ending a marriage leads to a lot of bad things, and is this really worth it? We would like to see people take a lot more consideration about what's best for their children and for them, not just today or next week, but in the long term. And we believe that if more people did consider that, there would be a lower divorce rate.
So, and by saying that, obviously you're making a statement that we're not operating under that framework right now.
I'm comfortable saying that.
Yeah.
The whole idea behind the report is to introduce this information about marriage as a benefit. And I think we focus a lot on marital breakdown, so much so that we fail to see there are any positive sides. So when you always, you know, cite the high divorce
to marriage.
Yeah, to marriage for individuals and for the community and for culture.
Define then what you, like, where are we on that pendulum? What does that pendulum represent? Mm-hmm. What's the problem now?
I hope I'm not repeating myself and hope to help answer the question. But again, we have a rising divorce rate. It increased substantially from prior years. And so I don't know that I can look otherwise. It's just stats bear that out. And so for families with children to have the information to know of the benefits of marriage would, I hope, strengthen people into a sort of a long-term perspective on that and whether they can overcome a short-term difficulty by staying together or by not entering into, a relationship, not entering, hopefully getting married in the first place.
I guess my question was not so much about the stats, but about, like, our mentality towards marriage.
Mm-hmm. I would say that we don't value it as much as we should. We don't see it as a public benefit. And that's something we're trying to encourage today.
I mean, using the bully pulpit, as you sometimes hear it called, at least that's what the U.S. calls it, the president, using the bully pulpit to say, here's something good, here's what you should do. I mean, should the PM or premiers across the country be coughing this up?
Do you want to take a stab at that?
We do that for a lot of things. We're not shy about telling people what's in their best interests. We're not shy about telling kids in high school, you have to stay in high school. And we're not shy about telling them what their future is likely to look like if they don't stay in high school. And this is the same thing. This isn't a question of religious belief or judgment. This is a question of statistics that show, as clearly as statistics about being a dropout, doing this will increase your risk of being in poverty. Avoiding this will increase your chance of staying out of poverty. So, just as we're not reticent to talk about the pitfalls of dropping out of high school, we're not afraid to say this is a bad thing for you, this is a bad thing for the public, we need to start talking that way about the benefits of marriage.